Okay, tell us about John Dottoli.
In 1980, I went to Cold Bay, became the chief pilot, general manager, whatever you want to call it. And John Dottoli was a guy about my age, Vietnam helicopter pilot that we'd hired. He had no fixed wing experience other than what he got around Cold Bay. So it was just John and I. As a matter of fact, about 2 weeks prior to that, John and I got in a big argument because he tried to use this big hero kind of guy. And he went out and did something I thought was very stupid. And so anyway, sitting in Cold Bay, I get a phone call that I've got a medevac to go to Anchorage. So leaving John alone in Cold Bay. So I took off, went to Anchorage. I was returning to Cold Bay, and about 50 miles out, I was cleared for the approach into Cold Bay by Anchorage Center. And then I switched over to Cold Bay Radio, and a girl named Teresa was working flight service. And I told her that I said I was 50 out, and she said, "You have an airplane out there." And I said, "Who the hell is that?" Now it's dark in the mountains. And he said, "John Dottoli." So I called Anchorage Center, told them I needed to hold at 5,000 feet or above to allow an airplane to get back in to Cold Bay. So I started holding, and then pretty soon I could hear John's voice on the radio calling into Cold Bay. Mind you, I had no experience with this. And so I called him up on, he called Cold Bay radio on one frequency. So I called Teresa on the other, and I said, "Tell John the airspace is all his." And so I went up there and started circling, just listening. Well, he was about 5 miles out, lined up straight into the runway. And how he got there, I have no idea. Anyway, he came in and he called. He said, "Go by radio, 4-3 Quebec. I'm 5 out, worked. Lights on step 5, lights on step 5. So they turned the lights up bright. I just kept my mouth shut because sometimes you say a word. Mm-hmm. And so I circled around. And I mean, it should have been about 4 minutes from touchdown. So I waited about 15 minutes. And then I called Cool Bay radio. I said, "Teresa, where is he?" She said, "I don't know." And it was a little less time than that. So I went over to the other frequency. They called 4-3 Quebec, and he came back in a very top voice. And I said, "John, just calm down. Just fly the instruments. Go straight, you know." Anyway, 2 or 3 more minutes go by, and he doesn't land. I turn my number 2 radio to 121.5, which is emergency frequency. And I hear, "Wee, wee, wee, wee," ELT going off. And tried calling John back, and no answer. So I did a low pass, went straight down to localizer in the dark, and couldn't see anything. turn back. And then I did a thing that John and I had learned to do together. He was showing me the thing, the official, how to find a downed airplane. But I'd already figured out my own way that worked way better. So I landed, and we were up all night searching for him. Next morning, found him about a mile and a half off the end of the runway, straight in. Killed everybody on board. The biggest mistake he made was by putting an innocent passenger in that airplane. He brought the guy that he was rescuing had his leg cut off at the knee, fisherman. He wasn't going to die. They could have put him on a boat and had him over in Cold Bay in 2 hours. So the Coast Guard came in that night. And they was blowing so damn hard that the captain of the Coast Guard helicopter said, I can't fly in this shit. And I said, well, get your helicopter in the hangar. I showed him on the chart. I said, this is where I think it is. The next morning, 6 o'clock, I went and woke everybody up. We got the Navajo out in the helicopter. Well, the helicopter went straight into Leonard Harbor, where he'd gone in. So I took off and I went the way I thought it was. And after about 15 minutes, I found them and called the helicopter, so they came over. He said, you want to land and I'll pick you up. I said, no, I don't need to see that. I said, just go ahead, fly over the wreckage. I want to get a visual on it. I'll meet you back at Cool Bay. So they landed, and I got pictures of this. That was it. Dead. Killed all those people.
So he got, in bad weather, he was over his head? And
way, way over his head. Yeah. Couldn't do it. That was my, that was a real eye-opener.
Did you feel guilty?
No, not at all.
I imagine you just have to be lucky a certain number of times in order to get good.
You're lucky, that's right. I've got that whole thing written down on the NTSB report.
Oh, really?
Yeah, grab it real quick, it's in my office. On the back shelf of the thickest book.
Alrighty.
In the meantime, tell me about N63C, out of gas on Lake Clark, Steve Hakala rescue.
What was that?
November 63, Charlie, out of gas on Lake Clark, Steve Hakala.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I'll pause that for a second. This happened not first. I got a video of that.
Being out of gas with Steve Hakala?
I got the whole story.
Oh, you do?
Have you seen it?
The one. Yes. So that's the one they did the show on?
Yeah.
Okay, where everybody came to the rescue of this airplane in the middle of nowhere.
Coast Guard. Or the insurance company was going to send up a bunch of people, and I called them up, said that I was in Cold Bay, and we have a goose down on the ice. And they go, well, we'll get a team together and be up there tomorrow. And I said, don't bother. I got a better idea. So I called Steve and Dutch. Steve came to me at 17 years old, wanted a job. I knew his dad. He worked for Revolutionary Ways Sandpoint, and that's where Steve was born. So he was, I mean, these guys are smart as shit.
He had it in his blood,
huh?
He had it in his blood?
Yeah. So anyway, Steve asked me what was about. So just get your ass up here. So he shows up in my office next morning, walks in, says, Steve, 6 feet Charlie's down on the wall, on the ice at Lake Clark. Could you go get it? He said, sure. Tore off. And then he took over the whole operation. And got it out of there. Saved us probably $50,000. Wow. Another one. I was in Cold Bay and Phil Logan. No, I was in Anchorage flying. And Phil Logan calls up, says the Navajo's gone down a mile from the end of the runway, 328. And so I called Georgie Tibbetts on the phone, said, George, I'm jumping in the Conquest. I'm going to swing in, pick you up. We've got to go to Cold Bay. So we flew down there and overflew the runway. And shit, we were from here across the canyon from the end of the runway. Those dipshit had, he was kind of a new pilot, had run out of gas completely and glided down and landed on the inside beach at Cold Bay. So we landed, got on four-wheelers and drove out there. And in the meantime, I called a helicopter outfit in Anchorage. I said, how much is it gonna cost to fly out and swing the helicopter to Cold Bay? They said $250,000. Airplane was worth about $150. So anyway, Phil had spent all night throwing rocks off the beach. And so I show up there, and I hadn't flown a Navajo in probably, well, shit, since I left King Salmon, probably 8 years. So anyway, we get it all loaded up and stuff, and it's sitting on planks, and here's a picture of it right here. Both engines feathered.
Was the tide going to affect it? Did it get wet?
It would have. So anyway, everybody starts crawling in this airplane. Phil Logan's getting it. In the meantime, we filled the back end full of rocks so the nose wheel was light as a feather. And so anyway, Phil starts dragging his fat ass up the stairs to fly the beach. And I said, no. I said, look at the size of your ass. I said, all that weight we just put in the back of this airplane is gonna be neutralized by your ass. So he gets out, I get in, Georgie's standing, everybody's standing there. I got about 700 feet to a creek. And then it crossed the creek. And if I hadn't gotten airborne prior to the creek, it would just knock the gear off, you know. So anyway, I jumped in the airplane. I sat there till everything was in the green. I locked brakes. Went as max power I could till those boards started sliding. Released the brakes. Started off full back pressure. Kept the nose wheel just dancing down the thing. Got right to the edge of the creek and rotated. And we went airborne. And I landed.
Whatever happened to the guy that landed it on the beach?
Fired him. He'd gone to Port Moeller. He topped the inboard tanks. Gone to Moeller, back, gone to Moeller again. And a little short.
What's the next one on this list?
Okay, I've been in Colvay about a month. And Leo Ost was a native guy. And so I hadn't flown with him. I'd flown with all the other pilots. He was a native guy of 13,000 hours.
Where's he from?
He was from like the Bethel area or something. So anyway, Duffy came in just at that moment when I was getting ready to leave, flying the Electra to Seattle direct. So I told Duffy, I said, well, I haven't flown with, Duffy just got on the airplane with him. Duffy told me, have you flown? He said, you need to fly with that guy. And I said, well, I will when I get back. So I got in the Electra and we started motoring towards Seattle. And as we're on approach into Seattle, approach control calls. Says, Reeve, whatever your name is. We've got a message for one of your passengers. And you know, go ahead. And it's for a cock-a-boo-boo or something. And they go, he's in the jump seat, listen, go ahead. So they called me and said, you got to call the office immediately upon landing Seattle. So I called Mary Fossen. She said, Leo's dead. And I said, okay, well, I'll get back up there as quick as I can. Turned around, went back up. And what he had done after he left, he took off and he went to False Pass. And the weather was shitty. And he just lost, did an accelerated stall. They think he was playing around because he dropped people off and he was in a real good mood. And he took off, made a hard bank to the right, and then a very hard bank to the left, did an accelerated stall, landed in the lake. He broke off every handle, the rudder pedals. The pilot seat was crushed flat to the floor. And anyway, we got back and got him out of there. And,
you turned right back around and went back to Colvay?
Yeah.
Did you feel guilty for not flying with him any earlier? Nothing you could have done?
I guess I did, but yeah, that was the first one I lost out of 12.
What about that, there's a picture I remember, Bill Redman took of you flying the goose. He was on the way to Akutan.
Right here.
That one right here. The one you just showed me?
But you're in the air?
Yeah.
How in the hell, didn't that hatch open up forward?
It does, but it blocks the wind.
So you had to push like hell to get it open or what? You just slowed way down?
Not that bad. It kind of wasn't that bad.
Yeah, he was just telling me he slowed way down.
Yeah.
Crawled up underneath.
Yeah, I forgot that was Redmond.
And then Justin, you remember going hunting ptarmigan way back when? Way a long time ago, it was like on Thanksgiving or something like that. We were in Colvay. Remember that, Dad?
Yeah.
And Redman was out. And I mean, we were just kids, but
yeah.
It was Bill Redman was out hunting at the same time.
I remember some vague memory about crossing this river in a Jeep or something, like driving across.
Terribly like that way.
Yeah.
Snowy.
Oh,
snow that time.
You're old books.
How about landing CD-8 in Goose Fog FSS, calling about overdue goose?
Oh, shit. Yeah. I was sitting there in Cold Bay and it's foggy as hell. Below IFR. And so I taxied out. Flight Service said, you can't leave, it's below IFR. So I said, okay, I'm just gonna hold. So I sat there for a little while. Of course, they couldn't see the other end of the runway. Register off. Went up to, let's see. Went north, and so then when I was coming back in, I called, I waited, and the north end of the runway was clear. So I landed, and then I taxied up the runway, had them open hangar door, parked a goose in the airplane, in the hangar. Went down to the bar and had a beer, and half hour later the phone rings, it was Flight Service, we had a missing goose. And I said, okay, well, I'll take care of it. And that was the end of that story, but shit, they never knew I'd even left. It's funny.
What about this crabber who couldn't get to dock in Cold Bay? Wind,
oh, yeah.
Goose pickup.
Dick shit. That's, oh, reminds me of another story, Rick Sasser. But anyway, this crab boat was anchored off in Cold Bay, and Rick Sasser was this womanizer pilot we had. And he fell in love with one of the girls on the boat. And so I'm laying there in bed and I hear the VHF radio going off. So I get out of bed and I go in the office and called. And Rick said, come on out and get me, I'm stuck. And I said, shit, I can't come out there tonight and get your ass. So he stayed out there all night. Next morning, I took off, flew out there, and picked him up, and
where are the dock at King Cove?
They were just hanging off the dock at Cold Bay, because the wind was holding them off. So anyway, I rescued Rick, and then he ended up leaving, but. Or something else. But yeah, they finally got the crab boat up to the dock and they tied off.
Tell me about, for this one might be on the list, but tell me about the one where you got chased by the cows.
I told that to
Justin. Did you already tell
Justin? Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't record that one. I was typing frantically on that one. You want to tell that one or a different one?
Because that was Unimac. What? No.
Unimac Island.
Was it? And you had to get to the top of the hill.
No, it was Sanac Island.
Okay, and you couldn't radio, so you had to.
So I was coming back from Yucatan. Got a call. I heard the Coast Guard Comstock Kodiak calling their cutter, and he was on the Bering Sea side. I'm sorry, Pacific side. So I called back and said, well, I'm right in the area. I said I could swing over and pick this guy up, drop him off in Cool Bay and save you guys from 2.5 hour airplane ride in the helicopter. So they said, okay. So they contacted the cutter. I got a hold of the cutter, told them what I was doing, and they said, okay, well, I said, well, I'm gonna go find a bay and on Sanac Island, and you guys send a skiff over with this guy. So he said, okay. And I went over there and flew around a little bit, and I couldn't get into any place that was a clear shot, VHF-wise, to the cutter. So I went around the backside, found a place to land. Landed there, waited for a minute, and I thought, well, I got to get on top of the hill, tell Cutter where I'm at. So they acknowledged that. And so then I walked back around, got into the goose, and I was sitting there, and then I was thinking, they'll never find me. So I got out of the goose and started walking up the hill. It's not very high. But I get about halfway up the hill, and I look back. There's a whole herd of short-legged little Herefords chasing me up the hill. They're mean little shits.
And they have long hair?
Yeah, long hair, short legs. I mean, within about three generations, they lose their legs. They just get short. And so I threw rocks at them, screamed and yelled. And finally,
they kept coming.
They kept coming. They wouldn't come closer than about the fireplace, but they were between me and the goose. So anyway, I go back down the hill and got back in the goose, and the skiff comes around the corner. So we load this guy up and took off, and ended up...
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Hi.
You guys, your rats here?
Yeah,
I
gotta go.
Not, anyway, I uneventfully took off and got him into Cold Bay.
How about Lloyd Guffey, PPS, VHF radio?
Yeah, I was, when I first got out there, started flying the goose out of Cold Bay. I had very little experience in the airplane. Lloyd Guffey was the superintendent of Peter Pan Seafoods in King Cove, and a good friend of all of ours. So anyway, I took off one day and headed out, and I had a job to do, land in the water and meet these floating processors, you know, pick up mail, drop off mail, do that kind of stuff. Well, I got out there and I couldn't find anybody because I couldn't talk to anybody. And all the boats looked the same. So I flew back to King Cove and land in the water and went up to Lloyd Guffey's place. And he goes, well, shit, you need a radio. So he gives me a handheld Marine VHF. And so after that, I went back out, got the job done, and came back. And he became, you know, a really good friend. And then by the time I left, of course, he'd gone, but I was there with, you know, it saved my ass, that damn radio. Somebody better go play with Mom. She wanted to do.
The boys are out there. My boys are out there still. East Anchor Cove, wind take off and swell.
East Anchor Cove. Oh, yeah. So I was pretty new in the goose. And actually, that was Lloyd Guffey on board the airplane that day, too. But I took off and went through False Pass and landed at East Anchor Cove. Well, in a southeast wind, East Anchor Cove is protected for about 600 feet. No, 800 feet maybe. And if you blew backwards further than that, you went deep into the swell. So anyway, I had a clear opening for takeoff, and it was right towards a bunch of rocks. So I got in the plane, and we landed and stopped. I left the flaps down, shut the engine off, let the airplane drift backwards in the wind. And then just about the time I think I got enough room to get the airplane airborne, some dumbass fisherman pulls in there and drops anchor right in the center where I was going. So anyway, I sat there and poured the coal to it. And then as soon as I got on the step, I started making a left turn to get out. Well, I got out from behind the protection before the swell started. So the swell threw us up in the air, and I kept fighting, you know, hit him flat. And about the third bounce, we were airborne. Got the hell out of there. But
wow, so it sounds like it was, each one was like slowing you down.
Yeah.
And then you finally like got enough momentum to,
yeah.
to where you could move.
I remember that when you louder than hell in that goose, and you're doing that.
What's that?
Oh, I just remember, I think as a kid, it was just louder than hell when that was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Boom. Strong airplane. What was I going to say? You mind pausing that for a second, Jess?